It's one of the most iconic moments in the history of golf. The Locale, the 18th hole on the stadium course at the Players' Championship. The opponent had won 10 of his previous 16 starts. The golf world was looking for someone who could tame a tiger.
Be the right club.
And with a 6-iron from 179, the moment was born.
Be the right club.
Welcome to the Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters.
Be the right club today.
Now, here are your hosts, Hal Sutton and Mark Greenhouse.
Welcome into the Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters for the week of November 3rd. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhouse, and special guest today, Mike Dinda of Makefield Putters. Hal, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Mark. Been a good week of weather. Always like that.
There you go. I like that too. It's been a little chilly here, so hopefully you've been warmer than I have been here in the Carolinas. Mike, how are you, man? Our man from Makefield.
I'm good, Mark. Hello, Mark. Hello, Hal. How you guys doing?
We're good.
We're doing good. Yeah, man. We're gonna geek out on some putter stuff today. For our listeners out there, we're gonna talk about putting on the PGA Tour. It's gonna be our topic of the week. What makes a good putter? When we get Mike in here, we're going to talk about, you know, how you create a putter, what kind of data you use, things along those lines. I'm going to geek out a little bit. So, I'm a data person. I'm a want to know person. I ask some interesting questions sometimes, so we'll get into all of that. But as we usually do, we are going to start off by talking about what happened last week on all of the major tours. And I'm here to tell you, Hal, this is the time of the year, I think, as tour players, maybe you guys enjoyed a little bit more because there's not a whole lot going on any tour.
It's the time of year that we spend doing the few things that we don't get to do at other times. And a lot of family, usually.
And Mike, for you guys in the club-making business, what's this time of year mean for you guys?
Tying up loose ends, getting ready for the 26 merchandise show, and hopefully unveiling our new model for the 26 show.
Ooh, new models. We always like new models. Yeah. All right, so let's kick it off. PGA Tour, nothing. DP World Tour, nothing last week. Korn Ferry Tour was done for the season. PGA Tour Champions done for the season. LPGA Tour, the Women's British Open winner, Miyu Yamashita of Japan, won the LPGA Maybank Championship in a three-way playoff Sunday for her second career title in her first full year on tour. The 24-year-old sealed her victory with a birdie on the first playoff hole, while the 54-hole leader, Hai Jin Choi and Hannah Green, could only manage pars. So always nice to see somebody win a playoff and not other people losing the playoff. I always like to see that. So that is a quick recap of what happened last week on the major tour. So we're going to jump right into our topic of the week. And this is really a putting roundtable with obviously a PGA Tour player and a Makefield Putters with Mike. And, you know, I've always wondered, guys, why was I such a good putter when I was a kid versus now I'm a terrible putter? I've gotten a lot better with my Makefield putter. But, you know, I was thinking about this question when I put it out there to myself. I'll let you guys answer. But when I was a kid, interesting thing growing up, I mean, I was the son of a club professional. But the golf course that my dad was the head pro at, he was an assistant first and then the head pro at, we didn't have a driving range. And the only time that you could actually practice would be like in the late afternoon in the summer. You could go out on, by the maintenance shed, and there was a couple holes you could hit golf balls out onto, and you had to interrupt play because you were hitting out in the middle of all the people playing. So they had to find their golf ball and all your golf balls. So you did try not to do it as much. Then you could also hit from in front of the first tee box, when there wasn't a whole lot going on. But again, you're still hitting golf balls out where everybody's playing holes, so it gets a little frustrating to the members. So you try to limit that. But I feel like that forced me to do a lot more short game stuff. It forced me to go out in the putting green and have putting contests all the time, chipping contests, doing all that kind of stuff because there was no driving range. So I felt like I was really a good putter back in the day because I spent a lot more time doing it. Whereas now when I don't play as much, I'm spending time when I get to the golf course trying to actually make a golf swing and hit the golf ball somewhere on the club face as opposed to the short game. Hal, what about you?
Well, I think we were better putters when we were young because we were positive, looking at making it rather than understanding what it means to miss it. You know, we have different expectations as adults versus our expectations in our youth. You know, we were always hopeful and not so much pressure riding on it. Now we seem to have put ourselves with pressure on it. And, you know, just the fact we want to make it, you know. And I don't know. I felt like I was always a better putter as in my youth because I didn't care as much, you know. We care too much as an adult.
Well, Mike, thank gosh I have a Makefield putter now. Otherwise, I might not make anything. How about you? I mean, you guys are on the cutting edge of putter technology. Are you a better putter now because of all the stuff that you do with putters?
Well, I answered the prior question, and I'm glad Hal answered first. But I was going to say the young people putt better because their scar tissue isn't as thick. And there's really no fear when you're younger, but I might be one of the most opposite people. I had 2 to 3 putts a green when I was up until about 18, 19, 20. I didn't learn how to putt until I became an assistant golf pro at a Ronimac golf club. And I was quickly learned, you better make some putts or else you're going to lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
So back then it was working 60 hours a week in the shop. You never got to practice. And he better get up and down if you want to save a $5 or $10 Nassau. But I would just think the kids or the youth, they don't have as much scar tissue and there's really no fear of failure.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, it just seems like that, you know, I mean, pressure, you know, Tiger was a really good putter in most of his career when he wasn't hitting the ball well. I mean, Jordan Spieth seemed to make everything at one point in his career. But then when the driver went sideways, you know, more pressure goes on that putter and you stop making things. So it's interesting to see how that plays out. Sometimes it's a stress of another club not performing as well puts more stress on the putter. And we all know that, you know, pressure does make you fold a little bit. So, you know, Hal, I'll throw this one out there to you. What do you think makes for a good putter on the PGA Tour? You know, is it lag putting? Is it making a certain length putt? Is it eliminating 3 putts? Is it D, all of the above, obviously? But, you know, we always talk every week that it seems like the guy that makes those critical putts is the guy that's going to win the golf tournament.
Well, I think it's all of the above. You know, a good putter on the PGA Tour is always making all of his putts from 6 feet or less. He's making several 10 to 15 footers, and he's making a few outside 20 feet. I mean, that's who wins the golf tournament, really. And, you know, you can – I mean, I'll go back to what you said there, Mike. You and I said basically the same thing. We just said it two different ways.
That's you know,
scar tissue, having had failure before, it lives in our brain. And, you know, it comes – rears its ugly head up at the wrong time sometimes, and we get fearful and miss the putt. And if we could just think in the future rather than in the past, we'd probably all like it a lot better, the result.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, when I start, again, I'm a kind of a stats guy, and, you know, I remember Brooks Koepka winning, you know, back-to-back PGA championships and the majors that he was winning in a short period of time. And I remember on one of the telecasts, you know, they were like, "What? Well, you know, how is Brooks Koepka winning this thing?" And the discussion was that he had like twice as many birdie putts inside of 20 feet or in the 20 foot and in range. He'd had twice as many looks as anybody else in the field. And, you know, Hal, from you, if you had twice as many looks at a 20-footer for a birdie in any event on the PGA Tour for 4 days, you're probably winning that thing.
Maybe.
I mean, unless you're just putting horribly.
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, you. I mean, I don't know how many 20-footers most people make, you know. I never was a guy that made a lot of 20-footers. You know, I was a good short putter. I didn't miss anything from close that really cost me anything. You know, made some 8 to 12-footers. Occasionally would make a 20-footer, you know, but it wasn't a routine thing for Hal Sutton to make a 20-foot putt.
Well, and I'm going to get to Scottie Scheffler in a minute, but Mike, you know, do you guys analyze the data at all around PGA Tour versus amateurs or anything along those lines? I mean, what kind of data do you guys have you picked up over the years in this industry, you know, creating putters?
Well, I've analyzed that my entire career as a PGA professional short game coach. So and any statistical data you want to know, if it's not in the back of my brain, it's readily available on the phone.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and that's the thing too. So I'm going to take Scottie Scheffler, for example. I look at Scottie Scheffler's stats for this past year on the PGA Tour. And, you know, we know Scottie's number one in the world. He's hard to beat when he's playing well. But you start looking at some of the stats. Now, he's 20th in strokes gained putting. He's 4th in putting average. He's 8th in putts per round. And he's 8th in one putt percentage. And it's interesting, you start breaking down the different distances, and, you know, from 10 to 15 feet, he's 10th. He makes 36.84% of his putts from 10 to 15 feet. Putting from 5 feet, which is the 4 to 5 foot range, he ranks 130th. He makes 77.78%. And the shocking thing that, you know, we talk about this with Scottie Scheffler all the time, putting from 3 to 4 feet, he's 104th, and putting from 2 to 3 feet, he's 125th on the PGA Tour. And those are some numbers, when you start breaking it down, that jump out at you that, you know, here's a guy that makes a lot of putts, but he does miss a lot of what we would consider short putts. I mean, he's 99.39% from, you know, from 2 to 3 feet. But that only ranks him 125th on the PGA Tour. And you know, that's, Mike, that's important data when you start looking at things like that.
Yeah, and I don't want to, if you look at that data, what was the one where you said he was 93rd from 4 to 5 feet or 3 to 4 feet? He's probably just a mere percentage point
right,
or two away from being top 20 or 30. You know, those guys are all the same, it
yes,
seems like to me.
That's, yeah, 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 but that shows you the fine line, right? That shows
correct,
you that when it potentially shows you that when Scottie Scheffler is making those inside of 5 feet putts in 4 rounds, you're probably not touching him.
Yeah.
You know, and Hal, you and I, before we started tonight, we were talking about Ben Crenshaw. I mean, there's a guy that was one of the, you know, probably one of the best putters you'll ever see. And yet, you know, he fired a final round 77 when you won the PGA championship in your group, at Riviera. And when those greens at Riviera are rolling, there's some difficult greens to negotiate.
Yeah, they're fast and they've got a lot of undulation to them. So, you know, even the best putters have off days. And, you know, as far as Scottie on those shorter putts, they're all making most of them. He misses a few of them, and it takes him down in the percentage, basically. But, you know, he's, what'd you say he makes, 99-point-something percent?
99.39 from 2 to 3 feet.
Yeah.
Yes, and that, I mean, ranks him 125th.
So that means everybody's making all of them, basically, is what that really means.
Well, so number one in strokes gained putting this year is Sam Burns. And Sam Burns putting from 2 to 3 feet is ranked 47th, and he makes 99.77 of them. So, you know, you're talking, what, to Mike's point, you know, less than 0.4, a half a percentage point is almost 80 spots on the PGA Tour. That's the fine line that these guys are playing with out there.
Yeah. I mean, just a few putts missed runs you down the list. They're making most of them.
So now that I have a PGA Tour player and I have a short game guru on here, building an effective routine for putting. Now, I'm going to tell you what I went through. I mean, when I hit a full shot, you know, I do all my stuff beforehand. But when I'm ready to pull the trigger and I have a club in hand, I mean, I don't take a practice swing. I'll stand behind the ball. I'll pick out my spot. I'll walk in, I'll set the club behind it, I'll do my, you know, looks. I forget how many I do. It's kind of ingrained in me by now. And then I pull the trigger. Now, when I putt, traditionally, I'll get in behind it, I'll walk in, I'll take three practice strokes, and then I'll pull the trigger on the putt. So I do have a different routine for putting than I do a normal shot, which seems to be fairly commonplace, I would say. But, you know, Hal, when you were, you know, a junior versus a PGA Tour player, what kind of routine did you have? Did it change over the years? Did you try different routines? So did you always have one? How did you build your routine?
Well, over the course of 25 years, yes, things changed. But I will tell you this, when things are going well, you can time somebody and they're virtually taking the same length of time to do whatever they're doing. And here's the reason why I'm telling you that is because your brain is working the whole time. And if you're taking longer, you're probably thinking about things you don't need to be thinking about. It's fear. It's worry. It's scar tissue, as Mike said. So, you know, routine is very important from that standpoint. And, you know, it doesn't have to be the same thing, you know, all year long. You can run through a slump or whatever and you say, okay, I'm going to change my routine. Then it will be consistent whatever you changed it to, or it should be.
Mike, when you start, you know, working with people and talking about routines, is there something standard that you would tell somebody to start with to maybe get them down the path of creating their own routine? And again, I used to go with the three strokes. I've heard, you know, gurus tell me before that don't take a practice stroke. I don't take a practice swing with my full shots. So why should I take a practice stroke with my putting? So, you know, where do you start with somebody and what's your recommendation for them to help themselves build a routine?
Yeah. So, a lot of my research and observation, was a lot during Tiger's heyday back when he was winning everything, except for that one time Hal knocked him off there at the TPC. But so if I'm teaching somebody, breathing is at the top of it. Visualization is there. I recall as a young junior golfer myself reading everything that Jack Nicklaus ever wrote. And one of his things I read, and it stayed with me, was he felt that he made a lot of his putts before he pulled the trigger. So with that being said, and I always tell my people to my players to walk up to the ball like they are the best putter in the world. See the ball going in, hear it going in, smell, you know, feel the pride you feel when it goes in. Visualization, breathing, in my opinion, are just as, if not more important than the actual stroke. Billy Mayfair made a few bucks for a few years there with a stroke that you wouldn't teach anybody. So I don't know what his secret was, but it had to be visualization, confidence, and breathing, I would think, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. That might be one of the ugliest strokes that made the most money in the career, in the history of golf.
He did seem to make it though in 3 and 4 week clumps. Yes. And then he would be MC Hammer for a few weeks, you know?
Yeah. I'm there with you. And that's kind of what you talk about too, is that, and you know, for him, it was no matter it's almost like watching Jim Furyk hit the golf ball, right? It didn't matter how it got to the contact point, but as long as the putter face was square at that moment of contact, it seemed to work.
Absolutely. So I guess to answer that, what I would suggest would be breathing. When I coached Drexel University here in Philadelphia, I helped the men's basketball team with their free throws one season because their routines were all jacked up. So I walked into coach's office and I said, "Coach, I can help number 45 and number 23 with their free throws." And he said, "What do you know about basketball?" I said, "Well, I don't know anything about basketball, but I know this kid's routine is different every single shot." And that it's putting to me, free throws to me in basketball are like kicking in football and putting in golf. Like, it's the only time where you control the ball. Every other time, you're reacting to a moving object in football and basketball and baseball. But in free throws, and I guess the pitcher and the kicker would be the other analogies as to putting.
Right, yeah.
So I'll make a point here, too. Every time you take longer, both of y'all play golf. Every time you take longer, are you thinking positive thoughts or negative thoughts?
Definitely negative.
Always negative thoughts. And yep. That's why routine is so, so important. You know, and by the way, don't miss this is a negative thought. So, you know, and I many times that crossed my mind in a critical situation. So,
well, and doesn't it always seem how, I don't know, it seemed like a lot of times when you hit a putt, a lot of your best putts don't drip over the edge of the hole. They go in with a pretty decent pace to me. And that, to me, is the confidence of your stroke and your ability to make the putt. It's the ones that go dripping in or like, oh, you know, that one went in the last second or the last half a turn. You know, maybe you were trying to just kind of lag it up there. If it went in, great. If it didn't, you know, it wasn't going to go 3, 4, 5, 6 feet by the hole. But it just seems like you watch TV, you watch guys on tour, and those putts that just never look like they're going to miss just go down that thing like a rabbit going in a hole.
Well, I there's a lot of great putters that just the ball crept into the hole. And there were some great putters that hit the back of the hole. So Tiger Woods, Tom Watson, I can name you more than that, that absolutely they putted at the back of the hole. Nicklaus and Crenshaw, they wanted the ball to come in from whatever side it was breaking on. It came in the side of the hole rather than the front of the hole. And, you know, they dyed it in all the time. They're all four were great putters. You know, I think it's to each his own, in other words.
Yeah, Mike?
I'll come back with, so the cup is 4.25 inches around. If your arrival speed, your delivery speed is such that the ball is going to roll maybe 2 revolutions past the cup, that makes the hole play at the 4.25 inch circumference. If you're hitting it like Tom Watson used to do, he was my idol back in the day, with enough speed to go 3, 4, 5 feet by, if there was a cellophane bridge across the hole, the cup's about as wide as this nickel. You know, you better hit that thing dead center. Cause I have on slow motion video myself shooting up top the cup. If you're hitting it more than 3 feet past the hole, you better catch the geographical back center of that cup. And I'm going to have to guess, I started golf in the 70s, but I didn't watch a lot of TV golf because there wasn't that much access back then. But Dad always talked about Tom Watson wasn't scared of a 5-footer coming back. He would just ram those blankers right in the back of the cup. So if you got that confidence, then go ahead. They're not going to bounce offline with spike marks or anything, but at the same time, the cup does get narrow. That's maybe why Nicklaus and Ben Crenshaw made so many putts, is because they made the whole play at the actual 4.25 inch diameter.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody made more putts than Tiger Woods made, and he was definitely putting at the back of the hole. He was a 5-footer. So, you know, I saw Tiger – just when I was playing with him, you know, 3-putt from 8 to 10 feet several times because he wasn't afraid to, you know, and his 3rd putt was a 3-footer coming back.
It could have been a 5-putt, right?
Yeah, it could have been a 5-putt, yeah. But
right.
He just kept up doing the same thing.
For us, Mike, it probably would have been a 5-putt. last thing before we head to the break, Hal, what kind of practice drills did you do on the putting green? You know, you don't have to get too in-depth, but what were the best things that allowed you to putt your best? Or if you were trying to figure it out?
Well, one thing that I'll tell everybody that they need to do more of is we go to the practice green to putt before we go play, and we're usually short on time, and we want to make as many putts as we can. So we go in there at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet, and we start trying to make putts because we want to hear it go in the hole. We want to gain some confidence. And honestly, that doesn't teach you the speed of the greens. So I would suggest that people spend more time putting some longer putts before they go out there. They don't like to do that because they don't get the positive feedback of it going in the hole. But they really need, in order to putt well, you've got to know the speed of the greens. And you don't really pick that up on short putts. So, and then I practiced a lot of around the hole, 3, 4 footers, you know, and, you know, tried to make as many as I could in a row. I don't think it meant anything if I made 20 in a row or if I made 10 in a row or if I made 50 in a row. You know, it's just the mere time that you spend on your stroke, getting the pace of the movement of the putter down. You know, I used to work on that all the time. Tempo is so important. You don't want hit in your putt all the time. So, you know, a lot of times working on the tempo and not even thinking about whether you're making the putt or missing the putt, it's just consistently doing the same tempo over and over again, having mastered yourself basically where you can do that is, in my mind, very important.
All right. Well, I want to remind everybody that they can head out to makefieldgolf.com for their Makefield putters. They are made in the USA. Some of the best technology you'll ever see. You know, you can customize your putter. They got the 3-weight system. They get all kinds of different styles out there. We're going to get into that a little bit in our next segment. You can do the personalization. There's a bunch of different things that you can do out there. You can get fit for them. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. So, stick around when we come back to Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefield Putters with Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh, and today, Mike Dinda.
Hi, I'm Hal Sutton. 25 years ago, I had the right club at the right moment, and it made a huge difference. Today, I've teamed up with Makefield Putters. I now use the right putter today. You see, Makefield has unique radial cusp technology. The ball releases faster off the face and keeps the ball rolling more on its axis. The result is a straighter putt, more on target. When you get everything just right, the putter that fits you just right, the one that you believe in, your confidence should be oozing out of you. So I would encourage all consumers, go to the Makefield website and educate yourself and get fitted correctly, get the right putter in your hand, and there's hope for better putting ahead.
Welcome back to Be the Right Club Today, presented by Makefield Putters.
All right, welcome back to the Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters. I want to remind everybody as well that we have a promo code out at makefieldgolf.com. You can use the promo code HALSUTTON15, all one word, HALSUTTON15. Get yourself 15% off a brand new putter. And speaking of which, still have Hal Sutton and Mike Dinda with us. And, you know, Mike, what kind of data do you guys pull to put into a new putter? I'm going to cheat a little bit here because you told me before we went on that you guys have a new putter coming out. So for the merchandise show. So what kind of things do you pull in from planet Earth and all the data that's out there when you start looking at making a new model of putter?
Well, we're always trying to get a putter that gets the ball rolling as soon as possible, skidding less frequently than most others. And at the same time, trying to mix in a half decent, you know, looking putter head.
Yeah. So is there, I mean, do you guys analyze the skid data of test models? Do you take them out there? You look at different green surfaces. How do you guys do stuff like that?
So at our facility in Bensalem, PA, just outside of Philadelphia, We had the Quintic system for measuring data on ball roll. The Quintic gives you numerous data points, but the main ones that we look at, and we actually do study other manufacturers, and we test them, and we're just trying to see how can we get the ball out of the depression that it rests in, because I don't care who you talk to, and even at Tour Championship, when the ball sits in the green, it nestles down into a little bird's nest of grass. So you have to get it out of that little depression and up on top of the grass and get it running as soon as possible. So we're looking at stuff like that. What loft is the best loft? What gets the ball up and out of that depression and tumbling forward sooner than most every other putter? So I would say that's the main thing we look for, is to get the ball rolling and get it going, rolling on its axis ASAP.
Yeah, and when you start looking at, you know, data for amateurs versus pros and off-center hits, I mean, obviously the pros, they're pros for a reason, because they, one thing they probably do better than even the best amateurs is their short game is incredible, and they make a lot more putts than us normal people do. You know, the standard amateur, you know, that's shooting 90 to 100 versus a tour pro, there's probably a huge difference. So, you know, the putters obviously have to be something that works for everybody.
Absolutely. And I don't know how to say this, but most tour pros can hit the center of the club face a high percentage of the time. So it's important that you have a putter for amateurs and pros alike that if you hit it off center, it still goes with the same amount of gusto.
Yeah, and I've talked to this to Hal before, you know, that we talk about straight back, straight through putters, arcing putting strokes. Hal, you've you know, share again what your style of stroke is. I'm more of a straight back, straight through person.
Well, I was trying to be not completely straight back, but my arc, I didn't want a lot of an arc, you know, and so, you know, it's really funny. The biggest tournament I ever won, I putted with a Spalding HBA putter. And I don't know if y'all remember what that putter was, but that certainly wasn't face balanced. And, you know, I putted so stinking good in that tournament. It was unbelievable. And I have never putted again with a putter like that. And I certainly probably wouldn't have putted at a high level with a putter like that again. But so I don't know. You know, I think we're a product of what we're going through at the time. You know, I had a pretty consistent stroke, so I made putts anyway, I guess, in spite of myself.
You know, so Mike, from that standpoint, you know, putter fitting is a little bit newer than regular club fitting. But, you know, what can we learn? What can we adjust with Makefield? And where do we start as a baseline when we start doing this putter fitting?
So I guess, Mark, to answer that, and actually to come back to what Hal said, if you can, Hal, you made putts because of this?
The heart and the head.
Can I say something to your point right there? I've actually feel like I will the ball sometimes to do something different. I could tell I didn't hit my line and I wanted it so bad that I felt like I almost willed the putt into the hole. And so to your point, what you were talking about, heart and brain.
And if I could mention, is this going to be on video or not? I don't want to mention the third
video,
place.
Just audio.
Right here too.
Yeah.
Here and here. There was no fear whatsoever. I'm sorry, Mark, where did that start again?
In terms of things that you can do.
Oh, fitting.
You know, fitting. Baseline fitting, where do you start? Where do you go from there based on right. What you're seeing? Yeah.
Right. So first off, fitting, my preference when fitting is let's nail the length of the putter first. Then we can nail the lie angle of the putter second. Unlike irons, it's not 100% imperative that the lie angle is flush to the ground in putting, because the face angle is responsible for about 96% of the ball's starting direction. So while it is important to get the lie angle good, I mean, Steve Stricker's made a few putts with the heel off the ground, and Tiger's made a few putts with the toe off the ground, and Aisawa Aoki used to have that bullseye way off the ground. They made a few putts because the putter face was square to the intended target line at impact. So to go backwards, I tend personally, we tend to fit for length first, lie angle second, and then neck configuration and line options on top of the face is third and fourth down the line.
You know, I've heard, you know, the, if people arc or straight back, straight through might determine whether we're center shafted or heel shafted. I've heard things about left eye versus right eye dominant on a right-handed player might determine some things as well. Could determine if you use a straight shaft or a bent, you know, bent shaft. Is there any truth to any of that stuff?
So I've been around a few years, and I have a few good friends that teach on tour, and I used to coach on the LPGA tour, and had a few kids on the Corn Ferry tour. But and just speaking with some of my peers, and there's no video, a lot of them think this about arc and face balance and toe hang. I'll say this, and I don't want to come off the wrong way, because Makefield is a superior putter, phenomenal, the ball roll, but you give a really good putter a stick with a rock attached to the end of it, he's going to have the willpower and the courage and the confidence to make that putt. But it is important that your putter gives you as much forgiveness as needed for your skill level. You know? And I don't know of anybody that actually swings it. I mean, God rest his soul, Dave Pels. I worked with Dave a few times back in the 90s, and it actually hurt my stroke when I tried to go two straight back and two straight through. I found it better if I just had a tiny little arc to it, because your driver wouldn't go straight back, straight through. But then again, you're not trying to hit the putter that far. But there has to be a teeny tiny arc. Maybe Bryson doesn't have an arc because he's got a 79.9 degree putter, which he has the heel about 8 or 9 off the ground. So he might actually be, his shaft might be at 90 degrees to the earth. So therefore, if you have a 90 degrees to the earth shaft, which is why the USGA doesn't allow it, if you have a 90 degree shaft angle to the earth, then by all means, you can try to be straight back, straight through. But if your shaft has an angle, which it has to by law, you're going to have a teeny arc of some sorts. That's my opinion. Not sure if it's fact, but it's my opinion.
That was mine too.
I like it.
I'm in with Hal Sutton. I'm good.
All right. So time for
I have seen Hal putt. He does have a tiny little arc.
There you go. I probably do too. I try and be a little more straight back, straight through, but I'm sure I arc it a little bit.
Because what you feel isn't always real, as we know.
True. All right. Time for some stories before we get out of here. Hal, the best pressure putt you ever made in your life. And then second to that, I want to know what the best pressure putt that you feel like somebody made against you.
So the putt I was most nervous on ever in my life was the 71st hole at Riviera when I beat Jack. I didn't hit a very good wedge shot in on my third shot, and spun it back about 25 feet and tried to make it going up the hill and running about 4 or 5 feet by. And it was so fast putting down the hill. And Ben Crenshaw said, "Hal, I thought you were going to grab the ball before it went in the hole." It was going in the center of the hole, and I knew it was going in. And I mean, I didn't want it to get out of the hole. So as soon as it went in the hole, my hand was in behind it to get it. And, you know, maybe one of the best putts that was ever made against me was actually when I beat Tiger at TPC on 17. He didn't hit a very good chip shot, and he left himself about an 8 or 10 foot breaking left or right putt, which we all know those are hard to make, and he poured it right in the middle of the hole. So, you know, I would say that was one of the best putts against me. didn't end up being enough, thank goodness, but...
Well, I still laugh that I was playing in the New Hampshire Open as a 17-year-old because my dad used to play in it every year. So I, when he went up there to play, I went with him and my mom was with us. And he had teed off on the first hole about two or three groups before me, and I was off the 10th hole. So as I'm coming up the 9th hole, I'd hit my second shot just off the backside of the green, and there was a hill up behind the green at North Conway Country Club, and they were sitting up on the hill. And, you know, it was a two-day tournament, but there's a cut after one day, and he kind of put his hands up and said, you know, how are you playing? And I think I held up three fingers, said, I'm three over, I'm playing okay. And I was like, you know, what's the cut going to be? I said, you know, I kind of gave him the scissors, what's the cut? And he said, probably two. And I had about a 20, 25 foot putt from the fringe, and that I figured I kind of had to make. And I kind of just like nonchalantly looked at him and my mom and just said, hang on a second. Just kind of put up a finger like 1 minute. And I turned around and I walked over that putt, Hal, and I knocked it straight in the hole. And I turned around and looked at him and said, how about now? And they were just both just sitting there staring at me like, did that really just happen? So I got to do it in front of my parents, probably one of the most pressure-filled putts of my career. But it was a nonchalant thing to me, back to your point. Didn't really matter. I mean, I'm an amateur, 17 years old, playing in a professional tournament. If it goes in, fine. If it doesn't, I may or may not make the cut. And by the way, the cut was on. It was at two over. So I made the cut on the number. But, Mike, how about you? What kind of pressure have you had?
Well, not as much as the 17-year-old making the cut in the state open. I was a football player and a hunter and a late golf bloomer. But I might have made a few putts over the years getting to sectionals of U.S. Open qualifying and when I needed to, and my hands were shaking like a hound dog. What's that expression from that movie? Like a hound dog blanking peach seeds, you know? Unbeknownst to me, that was back when I was more of a playing pro than a teaching pro. I just tried to visualize the ball going in and hit it and didn't pay attention to my shaking hands. You know, I just tried to breathe and just see it going in. But yeah, I made a few putts. Yeah. Never at Hal's level, but it's always fun making them when you have to. Well, you don't have to, but you'd like to, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I want to remind everybody about the promo code HalSutton15 for 15% off at MakefieldGolf.com. Now we're going to let you know what's going to happen in the coming week of golf. On the PGA Tour, they have the Worldwide Technology Championship won by Austin Eckroat last year by one over Justin Lauer. Eckroat did not parlay that late season win into a great 2025, only five top 25 finishes and 107th place finish in the points. The DP World Tour goes to the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. That used to be in January and is now in year two of being a playoff event. Paul Waring won last year by two over Tyrrell Hatton. Waring's had a miserable year on the PGA Tour because he was able to take that and get a card for the PGA Tour. He only made 2 of 12 cuts, and he did not actually finish any of the five events that he played on the DP World Tour. He's not had a good year. I think he's had some issues health-wise and some other things going on, so hopefully he can maybe get that winning feeling back this week on the DP World Tour. And then on the LPGA Tour, the Toto Japan Classic is next up. Last year, Ryo Takeda won in a playoff that lasted six sudden death holes as she defeated Marina Alex. It was her first victory on the LPGA Tour, and she has turned that into a very good 2025 with a win and currently standing fourth place in the points. If you want to pay attention to what's coming up for guys that played in the Korn Ferry Tour, they are done for the year, but they do have Q School coming up next month. And as Todd and I were talking about last week, the top five in ties from the Q School, they get nothing better than the 29th exemption for the priority list on the PGA Tour for 2026. So all that work that they're going to do and be pretty far down the list in terms of getting into golf tournaments. So that is a wrap up of what's coming up in this week in golf. Gentlemen, Mike, I appreciate you and Make Field Putters, and appreciate coming on and dropping some knowledge on us. And Hal, as always, my man, we'll check back in with you in 2 weeks, but appreciate all of your insights from your time on the PGA Tour.
Well, always a pleasure, Mark. Mike, thanks for coming on with us. Always enjoy your insight.
Good seeing you, buddy.
Good seeing you.
Yep. And as a reminder, head on out to makefieldgolf.com. Check in with all the putters out there, all the different technology that they have, and something else coming soon. So stick around in the coming weeks. Maybe we'll get a little bit more of a preview for you guys. But in the meantime, again, always listen to us weekly right here. Todd Burrell will be back with me next week on Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters.
Thank you for listening to Be the Right Club Today with your host, Hal Sutton and Mark Greenhalgh, presented by Makefield Putters.
The preceding episode was a production of Moonlight Media Works.